Welcome into a brand new episode of the Believe and Royals podcast. I'm Alex Fuse. There's Danner. And we are joined with a very special guest, Alec Lewis, Kansas City Royals beat writer with The Athletic. Alec, thanks again for hopping on the podcast today. First off, how are you doing on this great Tuesday morning?
Yeah, you'll probably hear it, but I'm a little under the weather. I don't know if that's just you cover 6 months of baseball and you're just exhausted. So at this point, my body's just telling me that I need to stop. That probably is likely. And if you could see me, I'm in my off-season outfit of a hoodie and a hat because that is what it calls for. But no, I'm good. I was in Arizona last week for a few days, checking out a ton of prospects, talking to a lot of scouts and Royal staffers, and it was awesome. So no, I'm good. I'm really appreciative that you guys are having me. It's always fun to catch up.
You know, you said you're wearing a hoodie. It's hoodie season. Finally, we had like 2 weeks of it's like, okay, it's going to be 55 in the morning, but it'll be 90 in the afternoon. And I'm over it, dude. I'm so happy. Like I wanted to be baseball season forever, but if we could have baseball season and hoodie season at the same time, that would be amazing.
Right. And the people who know me know that I commit to hoodie. So if I'm starting the day and it's 55 and getting to, I mean, I'm wearing a hoodie and I just roll through and I guess I'm sweating during the day, but you're right. If it's not baseball season, might as well be able to wear the comfortable things. That's for sure.
I'm all aboard the hoodie season.
How could you not be? I've got my whole closet is, I don't know. I made the transition from quarter zip to hoodie years ago, and it's been an ongoing evolution. But no, it was interesting. Like Arizona, I was out there last week, and it was that exact thing. The morning it would be like 50, and it gets real cold out there in the morning, and then obviously through the day, as it's similar to spring training, it gets hot, and so you're kind of navigating all of it. But just to be out there was very, very enjoyable.
You're seeing things, you know, this past week out there that have you really excited for? I mean, obviously you're excited for baseball season all the time, but in particular, the things that have you really looking forward to next year, things that you think we might see, you know, people that might come up at the big league level next year?
Yeah, I didn't see Bobby Witt Jr. And I didn't see Nick Prado or MJ Melendez. Those three already probably excite not only me, obviously having covered these guys the last couple of years, but the organization, and then obviously the fan base, but saw a ton of stuff. And yeah, just to see how kind of the Royals organization in the fall goes about things. And I was talking to a scout about, he was frustrated that he couldn't see the guys take batting practice on the field. And usually like, if you go to a big league game, you'll see hours before a game, teams, MLB teams take batting practice on the field. And it's very casual, but the way the Royals hitting the development department's operating now is they really don't, there's not many just casual, we're going to swing for the fences riffs. It's very intentional. And so that is a small little, I think, microcosm of just the environment as a whole. They keep things very focused. There were a lot of cool things that stood out. A lot of the young players and energy that I think always rubs off and excites you. So when I can be out there and hang around some of these young guys, be it an Eric Pena, who's 18 and from the Dominican Republic, or be it, I mean, any pitcher, Brandon Markland, who is a reliever that very few people know, but had Tommy John surgery and is kind of working his way back. Just to hear kind of the vibe of those guys is a joy. And it's part of what I love most about this job, when I get to kind of just hang around, have conversations with these people about their lives beyond the game. That's because they're human beings. So, it's exciting for sure all the way around.
What did you learn most in Arizona in your short trip there?
Oof, that's tough. I think I learned that the baseball world, beyond just obviously the Royal staff, has a lot of respect for what the Royals have been doing, both on the drafting side and developing side. And I think a lot of people who read myself and follow think I'm like the eternal optimist. And I mean, part of that is because I think it's what I love about baseball is the hope and kind of the future and that type of element is really what I love about the game. But I think just to hear from many scouts, guys who had seen a lot of these players in the past and who have watched the farm system kind of transition, especially with what the Royals have done developmentally, I think to hear that optimism from the external side was, to me, probably what stood out most. There were a lot of other elements to it, I think from an internal Royals perspective that I was kind of digging into that we'll have stories on in the next couple of weeks, probably, that I think I learned that they are as committed as they talk about. But I think just to hear what people on the outside think of this farm system and the transition that it's made over the last couple of years, I think stood out to me most, and it was just kind of a confirmation of what I've written about a lot, honestly.
I have a lot of friends that griped about, you know, the way we performed after winning, you know, going back-to-back World Series, winning it in 2015. And I think a lot of us had to realize, like, especially with your farm system, that's when the bills come due, you know, to pay for those two World Series trips. Do you think, I mean, are you seeing light at the end of the tunnel at this point with everything that we have going on?
Yeah, I think so, for sure. I mean, we've talked about it. I'm sure you guys have. I'm sure Royals fans and even the Royals staff, how the way things played out in 2015 and 16 and then 17 and losing the core that brought you to a World Series and brought, I think, Royals fans in this city to a place they probably – many of them probably didn't expect they'd get to. The way that played out put this organization in a situation where they knew they would be rebuilding. And that's never fun for anybody. You obviously always want to compete. I think the people at the top of this Rose organization want to compete more than really any fan probably would. They think about it all day long and dream about it and sleep, think about it all the time. So to your point, Jeremy, I think as time has kind of past in these 6 years, obviously 5 years have not been the easiest, I think you are for sure starting to see a light at the end. And I think I mentioned some of the guys, Bobby Witt, obviously, MJ Melendez, Nick Prado, those types of guys. I think the pitching just continues to produce guys. I mean, there are prospects in the system that nobody knows about, and even down to like a Zach Hockey, who was another 2018 MLB draft pick, I think in the sixth round, who was pitching in the Arizona Fall League, who scouts really like. And if he can stay healthy, he's another guy beyond the eight or however many debuted this past year that I think can contribute to this team. And so I think that's why there is that light at the end of the tunnel. And I understand a lot of times when fans want to see the results now, that's how fans' expectations should be. But there is one scout was like, it's funny to hear how people reacted to Daniel Lynch's struggles at the very beginning, because he has the stuff to be a top of the line starter. And I think everybody knows that. And while it's tough to see struggles early, I think time proves often. I think Candace Parker had a quote yesterday, maybe. And it was like, sometimes you don't have to tell your story, time will. And I think with a lot of these prospect debuts, that's kind of the vein I think about that in. So I think the light at the end of the tunnel is pretty clear. And I think this year, as guys like Bobby Witt Jr. and MJ and Nick Prado transition to big league, people will start to see that for sure.
Alec, were you surprised that fans and obviously people like yourself covering this team did not see a Bobby Witt Jr. at the big league level in the 2021 season?
Man, somewhat. I think just because of the way spring training played out, I mean, he was just so dominant in spring training. He was so dominant going back to the summer camp in 2020 when I think he had like a 12 pitch at bat off Danny Duffy. And there was like I'll never get this image out of my head, but it was Danny Duffy on the mound, 12 pitch at bat against like a 19-year-old, 20-year-old Bobby Witt Jr. And afterward, Bobby, I think, got a hit and they were like laughing around on the field, Whit Merrifield and Danny Duffy. And I think Danny afterwards said, jokingly, like, best player of all time. So that happened. And then spring training, he hit a few towering home runs and just seemed like the clubhouse really respected him in a way that I think we often undervalue with these prospects coming up. I think it really matters that these young players have the respect of the guys who have grinded throughout the system, like a Whit Merrifield, to get to where they are. And so I think as the year played out and Bobby continued to dominate, I think I was somewhat surprised that he didn't debut. But there are a lot of factors often that we, even as reporters, and it's my job to find out as much information about this team that I can and provide that to the fans, there's often so much that we don't know. And I think the more time I've done this, the more I've learned that there's so much that goes on behind the scenes, so much information that we don't have that plays into these decisions. And so I think as I think about that, I think I can balance out my opinion of, yes, he should be getting this opportunity with they probably know something or have an opinion that is founded more than my opinion on the outside would be, if that makes sense. But I think overall, for him to prove what he did at the AA level and the AAA level, and prove that really, I mean, there's not much more he can accomplish in the minor leagues, I think it's probably going to benefit him for a long time to come. And I think that's what the Royals' hope was as they saw this season play out.
Have you had a chance to talk to him after he was named the minor league player of the year? And has there been, I mean, all the interviews I've seen, dude seems super humble, like a regular, you know, hardworking guy trying to do the best he can. Have you talked to him following that? Does that change anything for him, or does he keep his head down and keep doing the same stuff?
It's the same. He's the same guy who in spring training, when you're drinking a Dutch Bros coffee out on the backfield, is like, oh, what coffee? He's just a really nice, genuine dude. And obviously I'm fascinated with like how fame affects people. And he is having things from all sides, people asking things of him probably all the time. And to this point, he has remained the guy that, I mean, I remember interviewing a couple of years ago. And I think you can't not attribute that to how he was raised, his parents. And I think just a special makeup of a player that has impressed from the day he arrived. I mean, I'll write about this more, I'm sure, in time, but I'm pretty sure in that 2019 draft class where he was selected as the number two pick in the draft, he was the only high school player that the Royals selected. And so he's the only guy of that age that arrived in Arizona. And you can imagine how, I don't know, stressful that would be. You don't have any people around your age to be friends with. And he navigated that pretty wonderfully. And I think ever since has impressed. So it'll be interesting, as always, to see how, when guys arrive at the big league level, how they react to all the, I guess, strenuous kind of circumstances that the big league level offers. But it's hard for me to think that this is a guy who is really going to
he really is the type of guy that he is. And I don't know. I think the way he was raised plays a major role in that.
How would you say going forward that this team, I mean, they finished fourth. The final record for the Royals was 74-88. And you look at the past few years, right? They've gotten better. That record has improved every single year going forward. A lot of people kind of relate this team to the 2013 Royals, right? About 2 years before the team went back-to-back World Series appearances. The game has changed so much just from 5 years ago, 6 years ago. How has the Royals' philosophy changed but also remained the same since the last time they played in the World Series?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, covering this team since 2019, I mean, and understandably, you hear about the 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015 years all the time. And everything now is compared to then all the time. And I don't know if it's maybe because I didn't grow up here or I didn't live through that experience, and that's probably the reason. But I have a hard time comping it to those years because everything is different. To your point, I think the game has really evolved. I think the executives at the top of this Royals organization have evolved and throughout the game. And so I just, like, I think Salvi said at the end of the year, like, he compared this season kind of 2012, and I can understand why. He has a perspective being in the clubhouse that I would never have. So part of me understands it, but I think your question was about how things have evolved. And I think, a lot of it is just understanding how important in a small market like the Royals have developing pitching is to sustaining success. I think as you've seen the Royals drafts over the last, I don't know, 3 years since 2018, even probably back to around 2015, and they've drafted a lot of pitching. And I think they realize that development is as essential as ever in developing players at the highest level. And people ask all the time, well, what does that entail? And I think it is having, people always say analytics and it's the buzzword, but having the best information that you can, harboring that information through as much technology as possible. And then I think more importantly, having the right people in place to translate that information to the player. And a lot of times these players don't understand swing plane, barrel efficiency, some of these like really in the weeds metrics. And so it's often on the coaches to relay the information in a way that these players understand. I think that's been part of the evolution. But the thing I think that has stayed the same with this organization and these front office executives is they believe that if you care for the player, come alongside the player, regardless of whatever development technologies and communication techniques you might have, I think if you care about the player, things will work out. And so I think that that coming alongside the player and supporting their development as people beyond the game is a I think tenet of this front office that that has stood the test of time. And it has stood a long time, because I think Dayton Moore, beyond Brian Cashman, is the second longest tenured now president of baseball operations in the game. And I think that just speaks to kind of the continuity and the way they've done it, because these jobs are very volatile. I mean, managerial jobs are very volatile. And I think to sustain a position as long as these executives have, and to be together as long as they have, speaks to kind of a culture that we write about a lot, but it's hard to kind of really understand from the outside.
Looking back at the beginning of this past season, you know, this is something that Alex and I talked about, is when we were just crushing it at the beginning of the year, had the best record in baseball, as optimistic and as much as I love the team, you know, I had to be honest and be like, I don't think this is who we are for real. And then we just stunk. We're very, very bad is the only way to say it. And I think we all said, this isn't who we are either. And I want to believe that we're somewhere in the middle going into, you know, the 2021 season, sorry, 2022 season. That's crazy. It's the end of 2021, man. Going into next year, do you think we're closer to that, you know, leading the league, stinking, or are we somewhere in the middle?
I think probably closer to the middle, but you hope you're trending toward the April performance. And it's so interesting. I remember writing about it at the time and really writing about it throughout the year, but there was so much that played a role in some of the struggles. I mean, Jorge Soler and Hunter Dozier and Brad Keller were three pivotal pieces to what the Royals were hoping to do in 2021. And all three underperformed any projection that any of these front office data research and development people would have had. And so to have started the way they did with those guys struggling in a sense, and then to struggle with those guys still struggling, some of it made a lot of sense. And then I think for the team to pick it up at the end of the year and the young pitchers to produce the way they did, I'm not sure if projections would have expected that. So to me, it all, I think I wrote this, but it's like you could watch on any given night and you could see a team that looked like, wow, they could beat anybody. And I think they beat the Astros. I don't know if it was a season series. I believe so. But they also, I think, beat them three games in a four-game series. And, I mean, the Astros, though they're losing right now to the Boston Red Sox, who are the hottest lineup in the history of Earth, the Astros are a really good team, and the Royals beat them. And then you watch on another night, and they're playing Cleveland, who truthfully did not have the year that they probably expected to have. And the Royals really did not do anything right. And so I think as the year, you take the year as a whole, it all balances out. I think 74-88 is about what everybody would have expected from like a numbers projection standpoint. And I think conceivably, if Jorge Soler had done what he did after he arrived in Atlanta, which I think started actually when in his last week with the Royals, if he had done that all year, I think this team could have won 78-80 games. And then there's even more optimism probably leading into next year. But I think depending on what they do this offseason, they're probably hovering around 500 next year. And you never know. I mean, because the 2015 team was not projected to be 500, and they did what they did. So baseball is a very weird thing. As you see the Red Sox right now, with all they've dealt with, they had the number four pick, I believe, last year, and now they're kind of in prime position. So you never know in this thing. But I do think around the in-between mark is probably where this organization, big league club, sits.
I'll never forget this. John Sterling, voice of the Yankees, considers himself a cockeyed optimistic, always looking on the positive when it comes to baseball or just life in general. If you could be a cockeyed optimistic for the next 5 minutes, what can Royals fans outside of Bobby Witt Jr. and outside of these great prospects really truly look forward to for the years to come?
Yeah, I think it's the young pitching becoming what a lot of people probably expected this young pitching to become. I mentioned Daniel Lynch earlier, but I really do believe he has top of the rotation type stuff. And I think if he proves that, then the Royals drafted a top of the rotation starter, which they have not done in a long time. There's also Carlos Hernandez, who probably throughout the course of the second half of the year was the most consistent young starter. And nobody expected that. If he can stay healthy, I think he also has that potential. And I mean, it's the most baseball cliche thing ever, but if you arrive at the ballpark every day and feel like your starting pitcher gives you a chance, you're going to win a lot of games and you're going to be in a lot of games. And I think, I come back to the young pitching. I think that's where it is. Jackson Coar did not have the year that he at the big league level, I should say, that he or the Royals would have expected. So I don't know. I think him turning it around could be a symbol for optimism. And then, I mean, over the as you look down in the system, as I did when I was in Arizona, I mean, you see a guy like Frank Mazzucato, whose fluidity and a delivery and size and potential is just it's very special. And Ben Kuderna, same way. And then there are other guys that we don't mention, as I kind of touched on before, that just kind of stand out. So I think the pitching and pitching development and that continuing to kind of show itself is probably where the most optimism is going to come. And I think really, if you take all these young guys together and blend them, and a lot of these guys have been together, both living together at the Lowe's Hotel in Kansas City during 2020 or at the alternate site, together performing against each other, competing against each other, there are bonds that I think some of the other organizations, young players, probably don't have. And I think all of that coming together for the betterment of this organization in this city that, as I've learned, cares a ton about its team, I think is definitely why you could be cockeyed optimistic without question.
I want to talk a little bit about the young pitching you're seeing. And I don't think most folks realize just how great the difference in talent level is between Double A and Triple A in the big leagues. You know, you can go to a Double A game and watch a guy just mow through a lineup and he gets promoted to Triple A and he gets shelled. Have you talked to any of the guys, you know, like particularly Cora or Lynch, about that struggle when they come up? Because I saw Lynch pitch in Omaha the week that he got called back up, and he made everyone look stupid. Like, people looked lost on his breaking stuff. It was insane. And then he came up and had a good start that weekend when he got called back up. But it's tough to maintain that level of performance against big league hitters all the time. Is that something that you've chatted with those guys about?
Yeah, without question. I think the two things they have both admitted, and the two things probably that I've learned most, are to succeed as a starting pitcher at the big league level, you either have to locate really, really well, or you have to have the type of stuff in terms of arsenal and velocity and movement that just makes it really tough on hitters. Because even if you watch these playoffs, it was like last night, the Red Sox are up 9-0 and Eduardo Rodriguez is dominating, but he leaves one pitch up to Kyle Tucker, who crushed a ball. I think these two guys have talked about it, Jackson and Daniel, but if you leave pitches in the middle of the plate, that you're going to get hit hard. Like, you try in the minor leagues to locate and do, you can get away with a lot of things that at the big league level, you're just not getting away with. And I think they've learned that. I've learned that. And I remember early this year, I'll never get this out of my head. Corbin Burnes was in Kansas City pitching against the Royals. Corbin Burnes is potential Cy Young Award winner in the National League. He was as good as any starter in baseball this year. And Michael Taylor was really struggling. Michael A. Taylor, really struggling at the plate. Defensively, never struggles. He's Superman out there. But at the plate, he was really struggling. Corbin Burnes has a ton of pitches, really tough to hit, but he left a pitch middle. Michael A. Taylor spun on it and took it 450 feet to the fountains. And I was like, there's a struggling hitter who just crushed a ball in the middle of the plate against one of the best pitchers in the game. And that's what these big league hitters can do. And so I think with the two young guys, it'll be interesting to see if they can locate better. I'm always fascinated in, like, how much can you improve command and control versus, I mean, can they add pitches to their arsenal that can keep opposing hitters off balance? Their development and kind of as how they talk about it, these two guys are very self-aware. they evaluate themselves as good as I or any fan or any executive could. So I think it'll be really interesting to see what kind of what they look like in spring training and as the season begins, because they're motivated. There are so many of these guys, and even Angel Zerpa and Jonathan Heasley proved it. There are so many of these guys who are going to be vying for spots, and so they know they're going to have to perform to stay in this rotation at the big level, which is all of their goal.
I got to ask, it's kind of an off-topic question, doesn't really have to do in particular Royals. Everyone that follows you on Twitter, you always love to interact. And one running joke on Twitter the whole season has been the catchphrase, "That'll play." Where did this start?
It's a great question, because I'm not really sure. The only thing that stands out in my head, I played a lot of golf growing up in Birmingham, Alabama. A bunch of my friends, I remember like when we would hit a good shot or something, I remember it being said like, "That'll play." And so when I say it, that's like my tone, like, "Wow, that'll play." It's sometimes a little bit of like I can shift tone with how I'm saying it. But I think I just started to say it and then fans picked up on it. So I was like, I'll just keep rolling with this and probably annoy some people, but maybe it makes some people smile. So that's, I think, Alex, and you probably know this just having talked to you and maybe Jeremy, and maybe the people who follow me realize it too. But like, I am so fortunate to have the job that I do. I'm really grateful for the opportunity and to work with the people that I work alongside. And so as much as like, this really matters, covering the team accurately and objectively really is important, and it's a serious thing for people in Kansas City. Like, I love having fun with this. It's baseball. This is not Watergate. And so I think I try to have as much fun and be as goofy, maybe to a fault at times, but that's just kind of my nature and how I see it. I enjoy it too much, and I'm too appreciative not to try to uplift myself and other people probably each day throughout 162 game season, because it can get tedious and repetitive. And so I try to be silly. That's just me for right or wrong. But I don't know if it'll play or not. Well, I guess see in the long term.
Do you remember, did you play Microsoft Golf on like old school PCs?
I did not.
That's where that came from. So there, really? I can't remember who the commentators were, but they would say things like, "That'll play," and it's in the deep stuff. Yeah. And then when you drill one on the green, you're dancing. So when I play disc golf, whenever it's off in the woods, it's in the deep stuff.
If I can carry that on, I don't know, maybe I need to send them a thing, make sure I'm not copywriting anything. But no, I didn't know that. But maybe I'll have to, I don't know. I don't use Microsoft, so.
This is probably, man, 25 years ago, longer.
That would be before I was born, Jeremy.
I know. And I figured that's where I was going with it. But yeah, I remember playing like Microsoft Golf on my mom's like work computer when she was a church secretary.
Sounds
now, like, we're, now we're in the deep stuff.
Sounds like a move. Hey, that'll play.
Well, Alec, this is our favorite part of the podcast. It's a fast five quick round. It's five quick questions, and you have as much time to answer them. Are you ready?
I guess. We'll see.
All right. I see you got some bobbleheads behind you. Which is the one that you least like the most?
Well, I've got St. Louis, they gave us like a Whitey Herzog fishing. Like, I don't even understand it all. Like, there's like this fishing pole on it. It's just kind of ridiculous. They gave it to us. I kept it. Whitey Herzog, I know he's a legend. I'm not going to say one bad thing about Whitey Herzog, because that would probably result in some hate or something. But yeah, like, right. I don't really need a bobblehead of him fishing, but I did. I have it. So, yeah.
All right. So I have a Salvador Perez jersey. I have a Whit Merrifield jersey. Whose jersey do I need to buy for the next season?
Ooh, wow. I think that the easy answer would be Bobby Witt Jr., right? I mean, if you can get a Bobby Witt Jr., that seems like the most obvious thing. But I think with Nicky Lopez, what he did this year, and just the way he plays the game, it's just very Royals style, and just how he interacts, I think, with the fan base. I think to me, we'll probably start to see a lot of jerseys, Nicky Lopez jerseys, in years to come.
What would you say would be your go-to meal in Kansas City?
I think the dog would be mad at me. If I don't say
I'm trying my best to cover up the dog barking. It's not working.
It's all right. The go-to meal in Kansas City, man, I could take some flack for this too, but I think Joe's, the burnt end Z-Man at Joe's, if you can get the Z-Man with burnt ends, I think that's as with the fries, it's just as good as it gets. I love Hawaiian Bros. There's some like local spots that I really like that I'll probably, Farina, this Italian, nicer Italian place I love. Bob's Wasabi Sushi is no longer, I don't know what's the situation is. They moved out of their current location. I think they're going to get, I don't know. I need them back, it's some of the best sushi I've ever had and in Kansas City, which doesn't really make sense, but I need them back.
Is Salvador Perez a Hall of Famer?
Yeah, I think he will be. And I've tried to write about this a few times, but I think so often we see as on the outside or even fans, they see Salvi, nice guy, as they should. Nice guy, loves the fans, enjoys the game. But what you don't see, I think, so often is the work ethic of this guy and how intense. Like I've talked to some people he's worked with, and it's like, when you talk about workhorse, that's this guy. And I think throughout the offseason, if you follow on Instagram, you'll see him in the cages and catching almost every day. But you don't see the workouts. You don't see the stuff he does to take care of his body. All of that will allow him to play for a long time. And I think from a hitting standpoint, I think he's going to be effective, because I think if he spits on pitches outside of the zone, they're going to have to throw him pitches in the zone. He's going to hit them really hard, as we saw 48 times this year.
And the last one for me for the Fast Five, if you could host a podcast with anyone, who would you choose and why?
I'm going to have to think about this one. This doesn't make for good podcast hearing me thinking. It's extremely tough. But I don't know. I think I will – I'm having a hard time. I'm trying to go through everybody. There are a lot of people. You host a podcast with Vinny Pasquantino, who I think is a joy to hear and talk to. So you got me there. You know, I've always thought it'd be very interesting to like talk to a guy like Dayton Moore, who has been through as much as he's been through, and just go unfiltered story, that type of thing. I don't think he would ever do it. Obviously, there's a lot that he can't say or a lot that he harbors, but I think just stories in the game, that type of thing, would be very cool. People who know me know, like, I am as fascinated with pitching as anything else in the game, how pitching development works, how pitchers progress. And so, like, I don't know, to do something with a guy like Tom House would be unbelievable. Just a guy who's been around so many exceptional throwers. So that would be it. I'm sure if later in the afternoon, I'll give you a better answer, but those are some weird ones. I don't know. There's gotta be someone better in my head, that I'll think of at some point.
But Tom House is one of the best to ever do it. So that's pretty good. Nolan Ryan's pitching coach.
I think it would be fascinating to just go in the weeds. I've always thought, like, even as I'm watching a game in Arizona with the scout, like, I always think it'd be so cool just to be in their brain and see what they see and what they're looking for as they watch. And it's so hard to get people to open up like that and to really kind of talk through what they're going. But like a guy like Tom House, who has the stories that he does, but also just like review film and go through, like, when you're watching a pitch, and you see him lift his leg or have his leg bend a certain, like, what do you key on when you're thinking about that? Certain stuff like that, it fascinates me. So he would be a guy. And there are a lot of people that, I mean, I can name journalists and authors and people that I could probably talk to all the time, but Tom House is what came to mind, because I've seen him on Twitter a lot recently throughout the offs, and I just pretty intrigued by just pitching and throwing in general, and how to keep guys healthy and help guys develop.
I would listen to that for sure, man. I love seeing, there's just a million things you can watch on a baseball field during a game. And when people say baseball is boring, I'm like, no, there's so many things happening right now, even when the ball hasn't gone anywhere. So that'd be really fascinating. Listen, and just breaking down everything about pitching would be super cool.
Well, it's crazy because people always talk about, and when I first got the job, and I did not come to this from like a baseball first background. I played it growing up, and it was probably the most fun sport I played. But truthfully, like throughout college, I didn't write about baseball. I did some stuff during internships. But when I started this job in 2019, the cliche was said so many times, like you learn something every day. There's so much to learn. And you're like, okay, I mean, but like really is the, but then like I've read the MVP Machine book by Ben Lindbergh and Travis Sawchick. If you haven't read it and you're listening to this, or you guys, it's like a Bible on player development in this era. And I've read it before, and I read it in 2019, and I'm going back through it, and I'm like, it's talking about torso, shoulder flexion in ways that like just stuff you never think about watching the game. Stuff guys do to warm up that matters a lot in terms of the context of their careers. And just I just so much of it fascinates me. Even like evaluating pitchers, you think velocity is incredible, and then you realize actually the fastball shape and the way that a fastball moves might matter more than the actual sheer velocity. And then there's deception and there's tunneling, and which matters more. It is an in the weeds rabbit hole that I go down probably once a week, which isn't healthy and probably why I sound the way I do, but I love it. So sorry.
Well, we want to say thanks so much for taking the time today. And now this is the time to where you put yourself over. Where can fans follow you on social media and read your work?
First, I thank you guys for having me. I could talk, as you guys hear, I could probably talk about this stuff all day long. I think about it all day long. You could, I guess, read all the stuff at theathletic.com. You could read the Royals stuff. That would be fantastic. If you're a Royals fan, that would probably make sense. But guys like Jason Stark and Ken Rosenthal and some of the writers we have, like Britt Giroli and Katie Strang. I mean, the list is a laundry list of people that you will enjoy reading. So theathletic.com. And then I'm on Twitter tweeting that'll play often at Alec_Lewis. So, no, like I said, I it's the off season, which probably means I should take some time off. But I think my editors are like imploring me to do so, but I'm just not able to, because I'm going today. Before we got on, I was listening to a podcast from a hitting coach that's an hour and a half about teaching guys training methods, because that's the way I am. So for good or bad, I will make sure at The Athletic that you're getting as much knowledge kind of as I learn stuff. I think that's as much as I learn, I want to kind of pass along and hopefully a fun packaged way. So like I said, thanks for having me. I'm jealous of that office back there. So whoever, Alex, who's ever all, I mean, I think we know whose office that is, but make sure to let him know I said that.
I will. I appreciate it, Alec. And thanks again for coming on today. And for Dan, we'll be back next week. So tune in to the Believe in Royals podcast next week. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll be talking with you in just a little while.